This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Wednesday Israel would not withdraw its troops from the border area between southern Gaza and Egypt until there is a guarantee it can never be used as a lifeline for Hamas. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
I'm willing to make a deal. I made one already.
At a news conference, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that ceasefire deal brought back 150 hostages, and of the remaining 101...
I'll do everything I can to get them in. But leaving Philadelphia does not advance the release of the hostages.
Philadelphia is a narrow strip of land along Gaza's border with Egypt, and has become a central obstacle in the talks. Hamas has demanded a full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, but Netanyahu says the corridor is vital to Israel's security.
Somebody has to be there.
To verify Hamas is not rearming.
That they can actually prevent the recurrence of what happened there before.
Without that, he says agreeing to a truce would send a message.
Murder more hostages, you'll get more concessions.
He calls that insane.
So it's not going to happen.
I'm Ben Thomas.
A senior official with the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden told reporters Wednesday that 90% of the current ceasefire proposal has been agreed on. The U.N. Children's Agency, meanwhile, says a polio vaccination campaign in Gaza reached 189,000 children, surpassing its target and providing a rare bright spot in nearly 11 months of war. UNICEF said on Wednesday more than 500 teams deployed across central Gaza this week, administering the vaccine to children under 10. It said Israel and Hamas observed limited pauses in the fighting to facilitate its campaign. UN agencies now hope to expand the campaign to the harder-hit north and south of Gaza, with the goal of vaccinating a total of 640,000 children. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba on Wednesday submitted his resignation ahead of an expected reshuffling of government leaders. This is VOA News. Kuleba gave no reason for stepping down. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky indicated last week the reshuffle was imminent, with the war poised to enter a critical stage and to mark its 1,000th day in November. The U.S. on Wednesday accused Russia of using state media as part of a bid to influence Americans before the November elections. AP correspondent Sagar Magani explains.
The government says Moscow remains the main threat to elections, trying to spread misinformation and confuse voters. One case the Justice Department unveiled accuses two employees of a Russian state-funded media organization of secretly funding a Tennessee company and fooling it into publishing Russian propaganda videos. Another involves seizing internet domains Moscow used to create fake websites designed to look like those of major news organizations. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the actions show the lengths to which the Putin government will go to meddle in U.S. affairs. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau suffered an unexpected blow on Wednesday after the small political party helping to keep his minority Liberal government in power withdrew its automatic support. His Reuters correspondent Olivio Zolino.
The Liberals have let people down.
In a video posted on social media, its leader said the party will no longer automatically support Trudeau's minority Liberal government. That means Trudeau will be forced to strike new alliances to keep governing. Under the 2022 deal, the NDP agreed to keep Trudeau in power until mid-2025 in return for more social spending. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh accused the Prime Minister of not being able to take on the opposition Conservatives.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. About 20 migrants were believed to be missing Wednesday after their boat capsized in the Mediterranean this week. The Italian Coast Guard says 7 Syrians were rescued. The UN Refugee Agency representative in Italy says the survivors are in critical condition and many have lost their relatives. The Coast Guard says the survivors told them they left Libya on September 1st with 28 people on board, but 21, including 3 children, fell overboard in bad weather. The Central Mediterranean is one of the world's deadliest migration routes. The UN Migration Agency says 1,047 migrants have died or gone missing just this year. Follow us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at voanews.com, as well as on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter. And remember to download our VOA News app. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Thursday, September 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The 2024 China-Africa Cooperation Forum enters its second day today, Thursday, in Beijing.
If you look at China's domestic, regional, and global politics, you see major shifts. And I think those shifts will have a direct bearing on its relationship with Africa.
An expert says the U.S. should always be concerned whenever a competitor like China makes inroads anywhere in the world. Reports said the Kenyan mission in Haiti might turn into a U.N. peacekeeping operation. A Zimbabwe court acquits and grants bail to some activists jailed since June. Uganda opposition leader Bobby Wine is discharged from the hospital as police seek answers to the alleged shooting that injured him.
We don't want to get into the arguments of injury by bullet, by a stumble. We want an opportunity for an investigation to prove it.
And the WHO says thousands still die from the cholera despite efforts to combat the disease. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. African leaders are in Beijing this week for the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, also known as FOCAC. Some experts on the continent's relations with the Far Eastern economic giant expect African countries to lobby for more Chinese investment. But analysts say China is increasingly focused on opposing the West, especially the United States. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Everything that happens at the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation meeting, some analysts say, should be viewed through the lens of competition over Africa's resources between the world's two biggest powers, China and the United States. Africa's vast deposits of minerals and metals are critical to the world's future. Coltan, for example, is essential to making cell phones and computers. Others, including manganese, nickel and lithium are crucial for renewable energy technology. The U.S. government calls China's influence in Africa malign, saying Beijing is advancing its own narrow commercial and geopolitical interests and undermining democracy on the continent. China denies this, saying it's boosting development in Africa while at the same time profiting from more trade. David Monnier of the Center for Africa-China Studies in Johannesburg expects the gathering, known as FOCAC, to demonstrate Beijing's desire for Africa to be on its side in its battle against what China calls Western hegemony.
If you look at China's domestic, regional, and global politics, you see major shifts. And I think those shifts will have a direct bearing on its relationship with Africa. The tension in China, United States, and the Western world has intensified. And Africa is also becoming that center of this geopolitics, political as well as economic.
Kobus van Staden of the China Global South Project says President Xi Jinping's foreign policy is largely focused on creating a multipolar alliance in which Africa features strongly. China, he says, wants this forum to oppose institutions such as the United Nations and World Bank, which it considers to be unfairly dominated by Western powers. China is already Africa's largest trading partner, with trade topping $250 billion last year, according to United Nations and Chinese customs data. Many African countries owe China billions of dollars for huge infrastructure projects. To repay the loans, they sometimes have to cut spending on public services such as healthcare. Li Honghui, a senior researcher at the German Institute of Development and Sustainability, says China's become very wary of criticism of its activities in Africa.
The Chinese side actually pushing towards more collaboration between China and African countries on experience sharing regarding poverty reduction. This is also how the Chinese side wants to share its model with the African side.
Li says China is softening its approach to Africa, while at the same time making sure its economic, political, and security ties to the continent remain strong. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The 2024 summit of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation enters its second day today, Thursday, in Beijing, with African leaders looking for more Chinese investment while Beijing seeks markets for its goods and Africa's natural resources. J.P. DeFarm is a former U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes and Sahel regions of Africa. He tells me the United States should always be concerned whenever a competitor like China makes inroads anywhere in the world.
It certainly comes at an interesting time when increasingly we see even more competition between China and some of Africa's traditional partners in Europe and certainly the United States. And so what will be interesting is how China reacts to not only the competition, but also the fact that over the last decade, there's been a decline in, after many years of increasing Chinese investment, there's actually been a decline, although it was a modest increase from the year before. Last year, the level of Chinese lending to Africa is half of what it was a decade ago. And that's, you know, without counting inflation into the equation.
So in terms of, as you said again, more and more African countries turning that way from the viewpoint of the United States.
Well, let's be honest. China does a very good job of engaging with African leaders. Already, you know, even before the summit formally opens, leaders from South Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and even smaller countries like Mali and Djibouti have already had bilateral meetings with President Xi Jinping. We think back just 2 years ago to the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, and President Biden didn't have any bilaterals. He had some small group meetings, but didn't have bilaterals. So the level of engagement is very high. So there's a lot to be said for Chinese engagement. On the other hand, for African countries that are in need of development finance, the reality is coming out of the pandemic with a slower recovery than anticipated, China's not in a position to do the same things that it did, you know, just a few years ago.
Is this something that you think the United States should be concerned about?
Well, I think we should always be concerned whenever a country that is a near peer competitor makes inroads anywhere in the world, and certainly someplace as strategic as Africa, with not only the critical mineral resources there, but the human capital. You know, the fact that in a few short years, one in four working age persons on the planet is going to be an African. So we should pay attention to China's inroads there. But at the same time, I think an opportunity exists for the United States precisely because China is unable to finance the projects that it has in the past. Lending is way down. It's half of what it was just a few years ago. And that's not even counting inflation. So the real value is even worth even less. And then also the fact that the heavy indebtedness of many African countries to China has led them to reevaluate the partnership.
J.P. DeFarm is a former U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes and the Sahel regions of Africa. He is now a Distinguished Fellow at the Washington, D.C.-based Atlantic Council. There are reports that the Kenya mission in Haiti might turn into a UN peacekeeping operation. The Associated Press reports that an official with the White House National Security Council has confirmed that plans are under consideration to alter the nature of the force. Johanna LeBlanc is a national security law and foreign relations expert. She tells viewers Douglas Mpuga that the U.S. government should be cautious about this approach.
I think the U.S. government should be very cautious of this approach. And the reason being is because, as you know, previous peacekeeping missions have failed miserably in the country. We know that the U.N. was in Haiti for over 10 years, which brought about cholera into the country. And there was also a number of allegations of some of the soldiers impregnating young women and girls in the country. And quite frankly, if you look at Haiti's situation after the UN peacekeeping left, the situation on the ground has gotten worse. So one would have to ask, did the peacekeeping mission address what it was intended to address at the time of presence? And I think if you do look at the records will show otherwise. But I think nonetheless, if the UN and the United States government were to proceed with this, I think it would be a great opportunity for Kenya to help solve some of the historical problems that Haiti is facing.
A peacekeeping mission would need the approval of the UN Security Council. Do you think other members like China and Russia would go along?
Well, I think that's the question a lot of people are asking. But based on history, we see that even with the presence of Kenya currently being on the ground at this moment, it was not something that was necessarily supported by Russia and China, at least not in great depth. So the possibility of China and Russia voting in support of this, I think it might be very unlikely. But as we know, when it comes to politics, anything could happen behind closed doors. Anything could be negotiated. But again, when you think about the power dynamics between the United States and China, for example, as China continues to expand its footprint across the African continent, making China the number one trade partner for African countries across the continent, I think that China probably will want to flex its muscles at the UN Security Council, along with Russia, as to whether or not they would vote for this proposal, which I personally don't think so. I think China and Russia probably will flex their muscles and won't provide the votes that is required for this to continue. But again, I may be wrong because in politics, anything is negotiable.
Johanna LeBlanc is a national security law and foreign relations expert. She spoke from Washington, D.C. with my colleague Douglas Umpuga. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 5th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ugandan police have denied the alleged shooting of opposition leader Robert Chakulai, popularly known as Bobi Wine. Police say they are carrying out an investigation into the incident that happened on Tuesday evening in which Wine received a leg injury, claiming he was shot. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Uganda's opposition leader, Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, was discharged from a hospital Wednesday after undergoing surgery on his left foot. It follows an incident Tuesday evening in which Wine, who heads the National Unity Platform, or NUP party, was involved in an altercation with police and a tear gas canister was fired with fragments hitting his foot. The incident happened in the Wakiso district near the capital, Kampala. Wine was just leaving a meeting at the home of party lawyer George Musisi when Wine noticed police beating, arresting and using tear gas on onlookers who had gathered near the home, according to the lawyer. Musisi says Wine was injured after confronting police who had set up roadblocks near the house.
It's upon the beatings that Honorable Chagulanyi steps out of the vehicle. And indeed, the intention was to engage the commander. That's why you're beating up people. And of course, shortly after stepping out, that's when those canisters were thrown directly in his direction.
Wine is an entertainer turned politician who unsuccessfully challenged President Yoweri Museveni in the 2021 elections. The government has denied accusations it tries to clamp down on the opposition. Lawyer Musisi described the extent of Wine's injuries.
When they did the x-ray, they found that some fragments had hit the bone. That is explained the much more pain than after how the wound even physically looked. But he's certainly in a better condition, much stable. He has been discharged. He's at his home now.
Police told a different story. Police spokesperson Russo Kechtuma told the news media that Wine had attended a celebration after which he initiated a procession on departure. Chituma says while authorities advised against it, Wine insisted on proceeding, blocking the road, triggering the police intervention.
The information we got from the officers at that material time was that they saw him stumble while getting into his vehicle. We don't want to get into the arguments of injury by bullet, by a stumble. We want an opportunity for an investigation to prove it, which must be medical and which must go through professional investigators.
Yusuf Serunkuma, a political analyst, says while police should have ensured no one was hurt, most of their actions are out of fear due to the crowds wine attracts.
Because Kampala is the capital city of political activity, if you can overwhelm Kampala, you've overwhelmed the government. So the government's fear is that even if it's spontaneous and completely unorganized, they worry that it might become something big and they may fail to contain it.
Police have come under attack for what most critics term heavy-handedness, especially when it comes to members of the opposition. Police say during the altercation, three officers were injured after being hit by stones and two of their vehicles were damaged. Halima Othmani, VOA News, Kampala.
More than 70 activists have been acquitted after being arrested in Zimbabwe 2 months ago for disorderly conduct for allegedly planning to peacefully demonstrate during a meeting of the Southern African Development Community, also known as SADC. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare that human rights groups want the charges dropped against all outstanding activists.
Jeremiah Bamu of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing 78 opposition activists who were arrested in mid-June at the home of Jameson Timba, the acting opposition leader of the Citizens Coalition for Change, and charged with participating in a public gathering with the intent to promote public violence and disorderly conduct in a public place. Outside the Harare Magistrate Court, Bamu sums up what happened Wednesday in court.
They were all found not guilty and were acquitted on the second count of disorderly conduct in a public place. And with respect to the first count of participating in a gathering, in a public gathering, at least 11 of them were discharged and found not guilty at the close of the state case, with the remaining being put to their defense. We then made an application for an inspection in loco before we begin the defense case in earnest.
The Minister of Home Affairs, Kazembe Kazembe, said the activists were planning to protest at the Southern African Development Community meeting held last month in Harare, hence the arrest. Others were arrested in other parts of the country, bringing the tally to more than 100, including 25-year-old Namatai Kwekweza, a human rights activist and feminist advocate, who was arrested along with Robson Chere and Samuel Gwenzi and forcibly removed from a domestic plane. Later in court, the trio said they had been tortured while in police detention. They were granted bail and released on Wednesday. Charles Kwaramba of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing them.
So we appeared before the court and the appeal was dealt with and the appellants have been granted bail. Our appeal succeeded. They pay $1,000 as bail salaries. They report every Friday of the month 10.
The activists' arrest attracted international condemnation, including from Mary Loram, UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, who commented Wednesday's events.
I am both delighted and relieved that the three have been released on bail. That being said, it is a travesty of justice that they were detained in the first place and then held for such a long period of time. The charges should be dropped and an investigation opened into the circumstances of their detentions.
Kanyu Farise, Amnesty International's Deputy Regional Director for East and Southern Africa, said all those arrested should be discharged.
All these activists committed no offense, but have been arbitrarily arrested and detained for exercising their human rights. This in violation of Zimbabwe's constitutional and international human rights obligations.
Rights groups have harshly criticized Zimbabwe for human rights abuses for decades, going back at least to the early 2000s. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Over 4,000 people globally died from cholera, according to the World Health Organization, the WHO, which says that there was an increase in cases and deaths in 2023. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says the global cholera crisis is continuing, with 22 countries now reporting active outbreaks. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Data from the World Health Organization indicates that the number of reported cholera cases increased by 13%, while deaths by 71% in 2023 compared to 2022. Countries like Afghanistan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Malawi, and Somalia are still reporting the largest number of outbreaks of over 10,000 suspected and confirmed cases. Other countries with the highest number of cholera cases in 2023 are Ethiopia, Haiti, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. Speaking virtually during a media briefing on the global health issues, WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus said, despite the lower number of cholera cases in 2024, there have been at least 342,800 cases and 2,400 cholera deaths reported to WHO across the world as of August 22nd.
Cholera kills 4,000 people a year, a disease that's preventable and easily treatable. Conflict, climate change, unsafe water and sanitation, poverty and displacement all contributed to the rise in cholera outbreaks last year. The geographical distribution of cholera also changed significantly, with cases from the Middle East and Asia declining by one-third and cases from Africa more than doubling.
The WHO report indicates that children under the age of 5 accounted for 38% of cholera cases globally. Ghebreyesus says, as a way of addressing vaccine shortages, the International Coordination Group, which manages emergency vaccine supplies, has since October 2022 suspended the standard cholera two-dose vaccination routine and adopted a single dose to reach more people.
The global cholera crisis has caused a severe shortage of cholera vaccines. Between 2021 and 2023, more doses were requested for outbreak response than the entire previous decade. About 36 million doses were produced last year, only half the amount requested by 14 affected countries.
There was a 125% increase in cholera cases in Africa, with many countries reporting a high number of community deaths, an indication that there are gaps in access to treatment on the continent. Felipe Barbosa is the technical team lead of the cholera program at the World Health Organization.
In Africa, the surveillance system and the way that the country are reporting cases is, I would say, much more similar with one another. And in addition, there are a number of countries that should be praised for doing that are also reporting the cases and the deaths.
The WHO considers the global risk from cholera as very high and is responding with urgency to reduce deaths and contain outbreaks around the world. This is the first year that multiple countries have reported deaths from cholera, which occurred outside of health facilities known as community deaths. In 5 out of 13 reporting countries, over a third of cholera deaths occurred in the community. The WHO says its appeal for $50 million to respond to cholera outbreaks this year remains unmet. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
That's it for this Thursday, September 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do. VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500, and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.
Hello, this is Linoch Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30.